This Cybercrime Magazine podcast is published by Cybersecurity Ventures. Visit us at cybersecurityventures.com.
Hi, I'm Dr. J, today's host for the Ask the CISO interview sponsored by Fortinet. I am here with Adil Saeed. Welcome.
Thank you.
Glad to have you here with us. I like to start at the very beginning, so I'd like a little bit of information about your background, where you came from, and kind of how you got to where you are.
Sure. So thank you for having me, Dr. J.
Sure.
Started off with a keen interest in science, not really computers. Mm-hmm. So I was a bioscience major, wanted to become a doctor. That never happened. Then I chose the side of computer science. So I went to school in the early 90s. That will not disclose my age. and I started going to school and also working at the same time. Had a keen interest in just hardware, technologies, trying to see, break things, and build it up again. And technology was just evolving at that stage, early days. Got me into it and haven't looked back since.
I kind of came up the same way, right? I was kind of doing some not technology related, but really math and science related things, and then moved gracefully into technology. And I've noticed a lot of changes between when I first entered and now.
Right.
What changes have you seen, especially in your position now? Have you seen in information technology? I believe you've been in IT since like 90s. So we'll say 90s and we'll leave it at that.
Sure.
But what changes have you seen? And then I'd also, you know, think our listeners would be interested in how cybersecurity has evolved throughout that time as well.
Mm-hmm. Technology has really evolved over the last 20, 25 years, right? Everyone had a computer. You didn't have a laptop. You had to go to a place to access anything you wanted to access. Internet was not freely available. It was a commodity, and it was not a commodity available to everyone. Now, it's a shame if you walk outside and no one has an iPhone in their hands or a Samsung or whatever mobile device is browsing the internet. So just with the plethora of devices, accessibility, and the differences in technology, how technology has grown over time, so has the overall posture of cybersecurity. Because before, you had to secure a computer or a LAN or a managed WAN. Mm-hmm. Now you have to at least manage everything. Each person is carrying three or four devices at least. And that just has exploded over time. So I think the inception of the internet, the evolution of hardware, that combined has resulted in a lot of things that we're seeing today.
Agreed. And I think the evolution, what contributes to that is everything now is connected.
Oh, yeah.
We're getting more and more devices that are connected, and even things that aren't connected, we're having to retrofit. I think that's one of the major challenges of a CISO is we're always trying to retrofit or figure out, you know, something that wasn't initially intended to be connected is now connected.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's you would have spent less time in trying to manage an upgrade before.
Right.
Right now, it's all over the place. You update one device, you have to update seven devices. It's instant. Everyone has it. I mean, it's just expanded the whole paradigm of security. And, you know, and security is no longer confined to the four walls. It's infinite.
You know, when I think of that, I also think of the role of the CIO. And so I've kind of toggled in between the two at different points of my career. When I was at the White House, I was the deputy CIO, and then moving into a CISO role post-White House days. You've been doing the same thing. You've been a CIO at various organizations. How do you see that role evolving and that partnership actually evolving, you know, in the future?
I've been following in your footsteps. I think traditionally CISOs came from a risk managed and quite a sturdy background, which was more about just compliance management, regulatory management. And being in the CIO fraternity, which is having that technical acumen, the business know-how, depending on which vertical you are in, adds more value when you transition over, or at least are asked to transition over, because no one willingly becomes a CISO.
Right, right.
when you shift over and become a CISO, you can take that technical acumen, the business know-how, couple that with risk management, regulatory management, and help drive more efficiency into business. Because the role of a CISO is transitioning over time. And as it's transitioning, What was the role of a CIO before? You know, a CIO would have been an IT manager.
Mm-hmm.
And as companies grew and technology became the epicenter of any business, all businesses are led by technology. Not to say it's not led by business folks, but technology is underpinning them. That led to the CIO having a seat at the table. Same thing in security.
Mm-hmm.
So you're no longer an IT manager. You're now a security professional. You're a CIO or in any division, business or non-business, and you take that to become a security professional, you can really help drive business. Because security, at least from what I understand, from what I've seen over the last two decades, is security has been an impediment to business.
Mm-hmm.
The office of no.
Mm-hmm.
How can you not do stuff? Unplug it from the internet. But having that acumen from a CIO perspective or that business knowledge kind of helps drive that, you know, you have to protect yourself, but you also have to find a fine balance between driving business, enabling business in a secure manner to operate.
So I've been asked a lot, the you know, I've spent some time in federal government and now in private sector, and, you know, what's the difference between federal and private sector and what have you learned? I want to ask that from a very different lens, though. I want to ask you, the CIO and the CISO, how is that different? Should they be merged? Or do you think a CIO should be a CISO for a period of time, and a CISO should be, we should swap roles for a little while to feel each other's pain?
Well, that's actually a very good point, pain. I think the interoperability of those two roles is a good idea, depending on the size of the organization, right? If I'm a corporate CIO, I led a business line managing the corporate functions for over two decades. Understanding how security works, understanding how technology works, the interoperability is there because you also have security in your under your remit. So to answer your question, yes, would it work? It would work. I'm not sure. First of all, I don't think they should be merged together because of church and state, right?
Mm-hmm.
Many security initiatives are not seen through to completion because they are managed within the technical paradigm and they
right.
get deprioritized. So I think they should be separate, but interoperability, switching roles, absolutely. You know?
Right, right. I always say that there's value sometimes in someone else sitting in the hot seat, because this is definitely the hot seat.
Oh, absolutely.
It's absolutely the hot seat. One of the reasons we're in the hot seat is because we have a massive shortage of cybersecurity workers, right? Cybersecurity Ventures predicts that there will be 3.5 million unfilled cybersecurity jobs by 2021. So we're almost at 2020. That's 2021, 3.5 million. That's huge. Is this one of your challenges you're seeing as well? Or if you're not seeing it, even if you are seeing it, how are you approaching it?
Definitely seeing it. I mean, it is, it's a 0% unemployment rate if you are a security professional, an information
right.
security professional.
Mm-hmm.
And it's supply and demand. There is way more demand than we are churning out security professionals in the right industry. And even if they are there, many of them do not want to be confined or bounded by an organization. They want to be free. They want to do whatever they want. So it's really a challenge finding the right talent. How I'm tackling it, how our organization is tackling it, is, you know, creating a pipeline,
mm-hmm.
seeing if we can get grassroots candidates through university partnerships, college partnerships, and also through other programs. If we can get them trained on the job, build that bench strength over the next 2 to 3 years, because
mm-hmm.
and then also move people internally within the organization, right? Technology professionals that want to be security professionals, take them through a training course. That is the only way for us to at least make a nimble effort to try to get the right people in the right roles.
Oh, so you mentioned something that's very near and dear to my heart. People always think that this is a people problem. It's a right people problem.
Right.
And so what you said was the right people in the right roles. What specifically can people do if we have people other than leaders listening to this podcast? What can they be doing to make sure that they are the right person for the right role?
That's a big question.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take a definition of a role.
Mm-hmm.
You are a security analyst. You're analyzing data. Or you are an ethical hacker. Or you are a hacker. The role needs to be defined by the individual. The individual needs to have a comprehensive understanding of the role, right? So the right person in the right role is, you cannot take a systems administrator and parachute them into being a security analyst.
Absolutely.
Right? So that level of training and that level of understanding, you find the right people. What we see, what we're seeing across the industry is, because 0% unemployment, many people are changing, are shifting gears and trying to get into security. My advice is do that, but at least get a basic level understanding of what security is, not from a technical level, but also from a risk management level, because security is all about managing risk and protecting yourself.
So I think what I heard, I'm going to replay this, is we should expand the pool. Yep. We should not just be looking at the cybersecurity workforce. There's an opportunity in IT.
Yes.
There are other areas of opportunity. I'm one of those people that think, you know, if you're artistic and that's you have a creative mind, that you are prime for cybersecurity as well. I mean, the adversary is very creative.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you know, we're not defending borders anymore.
Right.
We are defending an invisible force. So if there are X number of people that are willing to attack you, threat actors, we have less than those people that are there to defend.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can just expand the workforce through nimble training, you know, a more, not agile in the word agile or lean in the word lean, but at least a bit of agility in training that workforce, giving them courses, having organizations give courses to people, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think we will definitely expand that workforce.
I agree. And you mentioned, you said, you know, how large, I think in scope, how large this problem is becoming, and the adversary is big, right?
Right.
When I say the adversary, I think of someone in a basement with a light bulb, you know, flashing up above their head, but that's not the case. It's really, really big, which brings me to the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
Cloud being big, cloud being massive, and even in ideology and in actuality. What is your view of cloud security, and how are we effectively making the right decisions in securing our cloud infrastructure?
I think cloud has added another layer of complexity to securing our data or our assets.
You think it's more or less secure?
I would say it's more secure in some instances. It's less secure in many instances. It's more secure if you have control of your virtual infrastructure, which means you have full accessibility, you're managing it, you have full access to it, you know who's coming in, who's going out, you're managing that instance. You have less control over it when you're using a shared tenant. When you don't know who your neighbor is, the only level of assurance you're getting is from the vendor saying, yep, you know, four of you are sharing this, three of you don't know each other, and then somehow something happens and the data is exposed. So you know, cloud is the way to go. Cloud is, it's not something that will happen. It has happened already. More companies are going to switch to the cloud. The security focus has now gone from the four walls of the proverbial data center into someone else's data center. Many times we all forget that cloud is not really in the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
It's still in a data center. So you still need to have those level of controls, asset protection, asset management, physical and data security. And you just bring that into a different paradigm.
Right. So, you know, I want to go back to our discussion about IoT devices and things being retrofitted, right? IoT devices are a huge challenge. And there's hardly enough security baked on for the things that we know about,
right?
that we have prepared for. When you think about the things that we haven't prepared for, what's your take on this? What's your take on the security being baked into the Internet of Things? Because, you know, just briefly, the idea or the cliche is, you know, security should be baked in. Well, in IoT, it hadn't really been baked in.
Right.
We're retrofitting a lot of things. What's your take on it?
Hardware-level security, which is, you know, in many IoT devices being retrofitted, is good, right? At least you are putting a level of hardware control, which provides a layer of defense, right? Not just software-level security, but hardware-level security.
Mm-hmm.
So when you start moving forward, when you start driving this, when you start driving how you're managing security in its own paradigm, at that stage, you come back and you understand, you're like, you know what? As long as you have the right level of hardware footprint, because that is also, not to distract from the question, but hardware-level security or chip-level security is also being introduced at the server side, on PCs, on laptops. So hardware is the way to go. You complement that with the right level of software, and then somebody's going to find a hole in there because of a bug.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we've talked about a lot today. I hate this question, but I'm going to give you this question. What keeps you up at night?
Everything.
I know. That's what I always say.
Everything keeps
me up. It's like, what makes me sleep? Well, you know, Dramamine or, you know, you know, whatever type of sleeping medication or whatever.
I think what keeps me up really at night is not being able to know or being able to manage, you know, where the risk lies. You know, we all manage risk and understand risk and calculate it. But not being able to pinpoint it, what will happen tomorrow, right? Mm-hmm. You can't, being in this role or any role in technology, I would say, you can't really sleep at night because you need to be able to understand what your overall risk is. And in complex organizations, that's nirvana.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what keeps you up at night.
So I just mentioned just a few minutes ago Dramamine. And Dramamine is really a motion sickness type of medication. And I always feel like we're always in motion. It's either up or down or up or down. It's never flat. We're never, oh my goodness, this is smooth sailing. Do you think we'll ever reach that point where I won't need my Dramamine?
Not anytime soon. Not anytime soon. Again, it's not dark and gloomy and the world is coming to an end, but at the same time, that evolution or that cyclical movement in the world of technology security, that is not going to go away. As we chatted about earlier, right?
Mm-hmm.
Supply and demand. We don't have enough security professionals. We have a demand for them for the next 2 years.
Right.
At least, right? And it will grow.
Right.
As we go more and more towards, I don't even need a PC at work anymore.
Right. Right. Right.
I mean, everything is Wi-Fi enabled. I don't need a wire anymore.
Right.
So.
Right. So I don't need a PC at work makes me think of the people in the organization, right? And this is, we've talked a lot about technology, but we haven't talked about the culture, the employee perspective. How important is security awareness? How important is it now in the future? And then kind of what ongoing enforcement should we be looking out for or should we be implementing as CISOs?
Traditional training has been a part of every organization's standard security program.
Mm-hmm.
You do it once a year and you forget about it and then you bring it back. Some make it interactive, some make it fun. Security training is the key foundation of having a workforce that is well aware, well informed, and not just doing it annually or not, you know, just sending a phishing email or doing, a vishing attack or doing social engineering. That's actually tailoring the training to the organization and to the individual's role or roles.
Mm-hmm.
If you categorize the roles, you target the training, do it more frequently, do it once a quarter instead of once a year. You educate people, then you test them.
Mm-hmm.
Because people will make mistakes.
Right.
They will.
Right.
We all do. And one mistake can cost a company a lot of harm, mm-hmm. pain, as we have seen happen over the last few incidents that have happened, right? It wasn't technology that broke. It was somebody that forgot to do something or somebody that did not follow the right policy mm-hmm. or the right protocol. So training that workforce is really important. Can we mature it? It's not like, you know, when you are 15, 16, you get a driving license. That was the only test you took.
Mm-hmm.
After that, you get tested in real life. Unfortunately, security is not like that once and done. We need to keep upping our security paradigm. We need to have different training modules, and we need to have more targeted training. Classroom sessions don't work.
I'm a firm advocate of targeted training. And sometimes it causes some disruption because one group will get the training and the other group won't, and they'll say, well, wait a minute, is this really spear phishing training or is it really, you know, something happening? I've been questioned a lot on, you know, why we're doing targeted in some of the different areas. And I always say, well, the adversary is targeting specific organizations, specific pieces of our business. So we have to maintain focus on and replicate what the adversary is doing.
Right.
So we've had a great discussion today. I want to give you the last few minutes to leave some final thoughts, some final comments. I'd like for you to do two things. Final comments for our leaders that are listening and final comments for employees that may be listening and hoping to hear some CISO nuggets.
Sure. First of all, thank you again. Two things, right? I mean, for whoever is listening or at least getting the opportunity to watch this, enjoy our chat and our banter, from a security perspective, we have to change the paradigm to go from a risk-based approach to a technically driven risk-based approach,
mm-hmm.
right? I think we have to drive that knowledge. We have to partner with the right business levels, and we just can't sit back and say, this is the policy, deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
We have to be more adaptable, yet we have to be secure. So the job of the CISO is changing to manage the risk, but also drive business, right?
Right.
It's that. So that's just one piece of advice. For everyone else that wants to get into security, this is the time. Read,
mm-hmm.
get training. A certification is not enough. get real life experience. There are tons of tools, tons of technologies out there that people can use. And what I would say is, when you decide to venture into the world of security, 10 other roles open up for you in the world of technology.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Great advice. Thank you so much, Adil, for your time. I appreciate you being on our CISO discussion today.
Thank you, Dr. J.
Thank you.
The Cybercrime Magazine podcast is published by Cybersecurity Ventures, your trusted source for cybersecurity facts, figures, and statistics. Visit us at cybersecurityventures.com.